Hey there, fans of the Wretched Hive. Before we get to the show, I want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial of the Audible service just by going to www.audibletrial.com/hive. That's spelled H-I-V-E. From there, you can get over 180,000 titles to choose from that you can play on your iPhone, over Android, if you have a Kindle, one of those, or even if you're still stuck on one of them MP3 players. Maybe even a Zune, if that's still out there. Are those still out there? They're probably still out there. You can play it on a Zune, I'm sure, because they took MP3s. Why not? Anyway, enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Wretched Hive Podcast.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Moss Eisley Spaceport.
What are you talking about?
You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
This is ridiculous.
We must be cautious.
Actually, we're just a bunch of guys talking about Star Wars and other stuff.
I'm looking forward to having some real talk with some real folks.
That's good news.
I like the sound of that.
It's another busy week here in the Star Wars universe. We got a new Rogue One trailer to talk about. We've got a new Rogue One poster, Rebel Season 3. Scum and Villainy Cantina is opening its doors finally. And we're going to cover it all on this week's episode of the Wretched Hive Podcast for Friday, October 14th, 2016. And guys, just when you think Star Wars news is slowing down, like the second act of Attack of the Clones or something, it comes back, boom, firing like a Kenobi Maul lightsaber duel in The Phantom Menace. And it's exciting. It is exciting to be a Star Wars fan at this time. And I, as are we, are so happy that you have joined us this week. And also joining us, I should introduce Wretched Hive hosts, including the chairman of Glenn Fry for President LLC, Greg Lent.
I am so, you know what? Me and Don Felder are like buds, best buds. And if you know any of the Eagles history, you know what I'm talking about. But anyway, moving on. Fans of the Wretched Hive, I'm so glad to be here this week. It is a super exciting week. We're doing something kind of different. We're doing this in two parts tonight. So tonight is part one, and then there'll be a special part two that's coming up that I'm sure we'll get to later on in the episode.
We're going to make the Eagles great again, Greg.
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are.
Me and Don Felder and Bernie Ledden.
Also joining us, lifelong Star Wars fan, Scott Ivansky.
Thank you, Steve. Just wanted to say I've switched my drink of choice tonight. I'm going with the Sailor Jerry's, and I'm super stoked that this is going to be a blackout type of night.
Well, if the pre-show conversation, if that's indicative of where you are tonight, my friend, I think it's going to be an interesting show.
I'm excited. It's good stuff tonight.
We also have captain of the Millennial Falcon, Nico Rodriguez.
I'm here, gentlemen. I'm actually here, and I should be here for a whole episode. I reset my router before we got here, so I don't have any weird internet issues halfway through. I'm ready to go.
Excellent. And the weird internet issues halfway through are sort of a tradition on the show. It's actually a segment on the show.
Is it really?
Yeah, weird internet issues.
God damn.
Fun with Skype?
It is. Yeah, yeah.
Fun with Skype.
Sponsored by Skype. And finally, we have Dave! Do not under any circumstances ever call him Harry Potter.
Good afternoon, morning, or evening, wherever and whenever it is you're listening. And I just I hope our offering this week is just an oasis of fun in a world of crazy out there right now.
It is a world of crazy. Absolutely. There's too much of it, man. Too much of it. This election, we're not going to get into election talk here, but man, it has been an interesting few months.
Thank God for Star Wars.
Yes. although I have to say, I'm just gonna jump in and get right to it. So we're doing this in two parts,
yeah,
because there's going to be a Rogue One trailer released tomorrow, and we wanna jump on that and be able to talk about it in real time with our podcast listening audience. But I was a little surprised about that because I was thinking they were actually going to wait until after the election, since the election seems to be sucking all the oxygen out of the room for just about anything else to go on. So I'm kind of surprised that they're launching this. I'm thankful, but surprised.
Really, well, isn't it just a nice distraction to have something other than Donald Trump and his craziness and Hillary Clinton and her and the craziness that follows her around? Isn't it just nice to have something else to talk about?
Oh, absolutely. I've been looking at and listening to people talk about how NFL ratings are down, and it seems to be centered around the morning games when people are watching the morning talk shows, and how this election is just sucking the ratings and the interest for anything that's happening just out of the room, like a bad fire on Backdraft with De Niro and William Baldwin.
And then out of the blue, here comes a new Star Wars poster. Yep. And new Star Wars trailer.
And that's a pretty gorgeous poster.
I'm going to agree with you. I like this poster a lot. I actually downloaded the full high-res version. I'm going to print this thing out and paste it all over my my cubicle wall at work.
Nice. Yeah, it is a nice-looking poster. And, you know, I think it's 62 days.
Yeah, we're in full countdown mode here.
We are. That's 2 months away now, guys. We are in full countdown mode. Yep.
62. You know, in 1999, I'd be standing in line right now outside Grauman's Chinese.
You're going to party like it's 1999?
Oh, hell yeah.
Wait a minute. 60 days prior to?
62 days.
Yep.
Wait, Scott, you were in line 60 days prior?
Okay, let's be honest. I was not in line. However, it was my birthday 2 months prior to the movie, so I do have pictures with the guy standing in first person in line at Grauman's Chinese because I went out and got completely hammered, and the people I was with, including my wife, drove down Hollywood Boulevard in front of Grauman's, and I jumped out of the vehicle and took a photo with the guy in line, the very first person.
That's awesome. Nice. So did you wait at all in any of the lines overnight? Did you wait in any of the lines overnight?
I didn't wait overnight. I think the longest we waited was around 8 to 12 hours.
Okay.
So I
did not either. I'm just curious about the people who spend like a week. I'm assuming that, you know, you gather a group of people, say the five of us, and like I take Monday, you take Tuesday, Steve takes Wednesday, you know, and it's kind of like that, I would assume, because motherfuckers got to work, dude, right?
Right. I tell you what, I will post the photo of me and the guy in the front of the line at Grauman's on the Hive site.
I am going to give a quick shout out to a documentary that was put out probably in the early 2000s called Star Wait, which is about about a group of guys who waited at the Chinese theater. And I think they spent a week or maybe even longer. It's been so long since I've seen this documentary, but super interesting, super, super interesting. It just a different time. Also, there's in 99 when episode one came out, we weren't in the nerdvana stage we are right now, where all the movies that come out are either comic book or science fiction, you know, some major nerd property that everything seems to revolve around. And Star Wars fans were still kind of on the outside, and to see the people come and just in awe of the people waiting to go see a Star Wars movie is just hilarious. It's really funny. You should, if you get a chance, go check it out.
Hey, Greg, how long did we wait in line for episode one?
We didn't wait long at all because we went to a morning show. We saw it down in Irvine, and it was a morning show. We took you out of school that day, and it was...
You took me out of school for all of the prequels.
We did. I think we saw it. I think it was like an 11 o'clock show in Irvine that we watched. And, yeah, so, I mean, we waited. I think we got there maybe at 8, so we waited only about 3 hours.
Right. And by the way, any parent who takes their kid out of school for Star Wars, you are doing the Lord's work. God bless.
Oh yeah,
you.
No, that was, it was awesome. Like after episode two, and they took me out of school, I was like, okay, so episode three is coming. That means I'm gonna get out of school that day. Like I was like already like I knew like there was a pattern,
yeah,
and it was gonna happen, and they didn't let me down.
Nico, you never had a problem. You always had a problem with calendars, except when Star Wars was coming out. You had that day marked.
Oh,
circle.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm really hoping that Alana, my fiance, doesn't listen to this, but ask me our anniversary, and yeah. But when Star Wars comes out, I know when that is.
I think it bodes well for our expanding fan base when one of the hosts says, I hope my fiance doesn't hear this on the podcast.
Well, I want to throw this out there just because in the intro, Steve always graciously mentions that I'm a lifelong fan. My turn to the crowd, I just got married moment was the Star Wars main title sequence.
Beautiful.
Excellent.
Of course it was.
It was.
It wasn't the... It was the Star Wars main title. It wasn't the awards march, because that seems to be the people who are Star Wars fans. They walk out to the awards theme.
That is a non-negotiable for my wedding when it happens, and I've made that clear.
It was tough. I wanted something recognizable. I wanted to go with the awards ceremony, the medal ceremony at the end. But as much as a lot of the hardcore fans know that music, most everybody knows the main title sequence, so we went with that and let it play it out. We actually let it play out into the intense. That's beautiful. Back to something real quick. Greg, Starweight is a great documentary. I have that on DVD. It's wonderful.
I may want to borrow that from you. I've not heard of this before. I was just IMDBing it while we were BSing. Came out in 2005, has a 6.9 rating on IMDb. The new Star Wars film arrived on May 16, so why not line up on the street 6 weeks before?
6 weeks.
Hundreds of people in Hollywood did just that, and Starweight takes a look at the lives of some of these people waiting in line in front of the famous Man's Chinese Theater. How do they get along with each other? How do they deal with the homeless people vying for sleeping room on the streets of Hollywood? How do they make sure that no one spoils the new Star Wars movie for them? And of course, how do they go to the bathroom? All questions worth asking and having answered. Totally.
6.9 seems a bit low. It's not a perfect documentary, but I think it's higher than a 6.9. I would put it maybe, not much higher. 6.9 is almost 7. I would give it either over 7 up to the 8 range. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I got to figure.
That's 6.9 out of 7. It's better than a solid 5 out of 7.
I think it's 6.9 out of 10, but what I was going to say was that if you look at the wide net of people on IMDb that'll review something, I think that's better than I would have hoped for, to be honest.
Yeah.
What would you rather watch, Starweight or Episode 2?
Wait a minute, where's the theme? Where's the theme?
Unseen, sorry. Starweight.
Guys, let's do a little housekeeping here real quick. Just want to mention, check out our Facebook page. We're posting a lot of stuff on Facebook and Twitter, but Facebook is a great way to connect with us, facebook.com/WretchedHivePodcast. You can also leave us a voicemail at 562-455-4483. That's 562-455-HIVE. And speaking of voicemail, guys, we do have a voicemail from a few weeks ago. We haven't played it, but I wanted to get to it today. One of our super fans from the very beginning, Faith Eastling, gave us a call, and she posed a question for you and has a little dig at one of us. Here we go. Check this out.
Hello, Hive. This is Faith again. I have a discussion question for you. The term headcanon, the parts of canon that you accept or alter for your own enjoyment. What things in Star Wars have you headcanoned, changed, altered for your own personal thoughts? We all know that Scott has replaced all of the Wookiees with Chewbacca Mom, so what else have you guys done?
Wow. Bam.
So we'll just start with Scott. Scott, have you replaced all the Wookiees with Chewbacca Mom?
Well, there is much hatred for me and my distaste for Chewbacca Mom out there. Okay, well, that's fine.
People love Chewbacca Mom.
Man,
we hate that which we love the most.
Oh, that's so sweet, Greg.
I was this close to buying one of those masks at Target on After Force Friday sale.
You know, it's been a long time since we talked about Chewbacca Mom, and I don't know how I feel about that right now.
What is
Faith's question here? What are we?
I think Scott's going to get a few Chewbacca Mom masks for Christmas. Her question is about headcanon. So she says, you know, the pieces of canon that you either accept or alter in your own head to enhance your enjoyment of Star Wars.
It's tough because they've changed so much. I've grown to love so much of the expanded universe, comics and novels. So that is actually a very good question. This is Faith Eastling. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Faith, for the wonderful question. I still stick pretty strongly behind my Heir to the Empire trilogy. I think it's a fantastic story. The hardest thing for me as a fan, as a super fan, would be also the continuity between the Heir to the Empire trilogy and the Dark Empire comic book series. They run very similar timelines, like very close to each other, and I've always had a little bit of conflict and overlap on those. It's really close to each other, and both stories are unbelievably enjoyable. If you get a chance, please check those out. Other than that... yeah, we can let the Chewbacca Mom thing go now. It's cool. I'm cool with you guys.
Never.
Damn it.
Never. We will never. I'll never quit you, Chewbacca Mom.
Then my hatred runs deep.
So headcanon, I mean, two things kind of come to mind for me. One is, and I bet everybody would agree with this, Han has always shot first. I don't really give a crap about what is actually on the disc that I'm watching. Han has always shot first.
Absolutely, Dave. I 100% agree with you. I didn't even go there, but yes.
And the other one that comes to mind for me is I don't know how, I don't know why, but Mara Jade has happened. Mm. Mara Jade has happened by the time The Force Awakens is there. We just haven't heard it yet. I have not erased her from canon. She's out there. Maybe her story is different, but that character is still alive in the universe waiting for us to be discovered.
So you agree with me on the Heir to the Empire, which is her introduction, correct?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this. Let me throw a side note ahead. I don't mean to interrupt Greg and Nico on this or Steve, but have you also read the Mara Jade miniseries comic book?
No, I have not.
The Emperor's Hand?
No, you need not that either.
You need to read that.
How about the Mara Jade miniseries?
The miniseries.
I'm just fucking with you.
Damn it. Greg, you just went all Chewbacca Mom on me, man. What's up with that?
I did. I love the way that you said miniseries. You have the emphasis totally on mini in that one, and so I had to go the opposite way.
I liked it.
That was funny. Sorry, we can edit this out in post. This is a conversation between us right now.
Oh, hell no. That's staying in.
You know, before I'm just going to jump in before Nico and Steve give their thoughts. I was struggling with this. I have not read virtually any of the extended universe books. So that's a universe that was completely foreign to me, so I was wondering, well, what do I consider different? But I think that Dave, I think you hit the nail on the head. The altering and the special edition of Han shooting first. I Han did shoot first. That other stuff didn't happen at all. So yeah, that's what I was going with. That and it's also pronounced Darth Plagueis and not Darth Plagueis. So because Plagueis is the lame name, Plagueis. that's my headcanon right here.
So your headcanon is Plagueis.
Yes, correct.
Okay. All right. Okay. That's important stuff. That's important stuff because it's important stuff because really, it indicates that I'm
I'm not sure why you're on this show. Because I've never heard anyone claim that it's Plagius other than you. Actually, that is why you're on the show, because we need your contrarian approach. Nico, do you have anything for this? Do you have any headcanon that you that you go by that maybe not in the proper Star Wars movies, episodic films, but you swear is part of the canon for you?
Yeah, Jar Jar's a Sith Lord.
Ooh, good one.
That is a good one.
That's tight. That's good. I like
it. It's the only way to explain why he's so obnoxious. But the fan theory behind it's pretty sound, and I'm just really, you know, kind of sad that they never explored it, just because, you know, public reaction to the character was so negative. Because I think it would have been a really cool kind of twist to the storyline.
And by the way, if you Google image search headcanon, it's exactly what you'd expect.
Oh, yeah. I watch Mythbusters. I know the headcanon is.
This is a visual, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah. This is awesome.
Well, my contribution is going to be Obi-Wan on Tatooine. And what was he doing in that time between episode 3 and 4?
Watching a young boy.
And making Adobe. But he,
jackpot.
He, you know, I always thought, you know, gosh, he's on that planet for 20 years. He's got to be going into Mos Eisley and getting, you know, policing and getting into trouble and going off planet and having adventures.
He's practicing a sand people breeding call, mating call.
Crate dragon.
The crate dragon.
Crate
right.
dragon.
Right.
No, but, wait. I got a question about that. Out of all of us, we all picked something that was actual. Some sort of, you know, a change or a comic or a novel. Steve, you actually went with more of speculation. Do you have something that's actually more like something that was put out there? Like,
No, I really don't. I mean, the first thing that pops in there is I always wondered, even as a kid, like, what was he doing there the whole time?
Okay.
You know, and really didn't have any answers for that. Until yeah. I read, there's just a few years ago, there's a book called Kenobi that was released, and I'll have to look up the author during the show here. It's a great, really fun read,
and it's available through Audible.com.
You can get that book for free today if you'd like. Audible.com/hive. but that book is great because it kind of talks about some of the adventures that Obi-Wan has and gets into. He deals with sand people. He goes and he has some dealings in Mos Eisley, and it's really cool. And I would like to see more of that. And all this talk with Ewan McGregor potentially being thrown back into the Star Wars universe with Obi-Wan Kenobi-centric films. I mean, it's just like a childhood dream coming true if that happens. So in my mind, it's always been happening, so I'd love to see it on the big screen.
Nice.
Yeah.
So who would be at the head of the line for a Kenobi film of these two hivers, do we think? Would it be Mr. Greg Glent or would it be Mr. Steve Baldwin?
No, I would knock Steve's ass right out of the way to get Mr. he would not last a second at the front of that line. I would beat him senseless.
Well, I'd buy my tickets the day they go on sale and hire a couple of big guys to stand in line for me. And you can try to knock their asses out of the way.
I see a potential future Star Wars Choices episode here, my friends.
All right. Well, so, Faith, thanks for your message. Appreciate you calling in. And we'd love to hear from you.
That was a good Others, question.
That is yeah. a good question. Faith is really a great fan, and she's very thoughtful in her process with thinking through Star Wars, and we're grateful to have her as a fan. And we would love to hear from others. Again, 562-455-4483. Leave us a message, and you just might get on the air.
From ABC News World Headquarters, this is ABC World News Tonight.
No, it's not. It's Star Wars news with the Wretched Hive.
So be it.
Well, guys, lots of news to cover today.
And first up, something we've been kind of watching for the last several episodes, at least since it was announced in August, the Scum and Villainy pop-up cantina made its debut actually today as we record the show on Wednesday, October 12th.
Debut might be too strong a word.
Well, debut to allow us to purchase tickets to stand in line somewhere, I suppose. It's a pay now system where you plop down money for tickets, and that allows you to and correct me if I'm wrong here, guys, get in a queue to be able to schedule your visit, which will happen in the spring, and I guess we schedule in January. Is that right? And fill in the blanks here, Greg. I know you went ahead, or Dave. Go ahead.
Well, I just want, before Greg actually gets into the mechanics of it, yes, you are right, and it's still easier than getting an appointment to see my doctor.
Yes, so it actually, so I'll work backwards. Right. So they're going to open up sometime in the spring. They will announce the days that they will be opening up sometime in January. And so what you ordered today was you ordered to get in line for when they announce the dates in January. Now, I don't know how they're going to do that, if they're going to send the email out and then those people get to pick amongst those dates and then send to other people. Logistically, I don't see how that's going to work, but that's how it's described on the website, is you're in line now for when they announce dates in January.
Got
so,
it.
As of tonight, the Wretched Hive is officially, ladies and gentlemen, in line.
We are in line.
Yeah, yes.
We have tickets for the Wretched Hive and the Wretched Wives. Very exciting. We're going to have a night out together sometime in the future. We don't know when.
I hear a sexy talk will be coming down the road.
Excellent.
And whatever you think, listening to this at home right now, whatever you think we paid for these tickets, trust me, it was more than that.
We are committed to our craft and covering Star Wars news live for you. Well, in the wake of buying those tickets today, you know, we were messaging one another, and part of that dialogue was this. Gosh, I hope this isn't a scam. You know, it seems kind of sketchy. So I did a little homework, guys. And there's an article on theforce.net today. It's at the top of their homepage. Scum and Villainy tickets on sale now. There's a quote here, and I'm going to read the quote. It says, from the moment we announced our intentions, interest surrounding the Scum and Villainy Cantina has been overwhelming. We've been deluged with inquiries and reservation requests by people from across the globe, says J.C. Reifenberg, proprietor of the establishment. Now, that caused me to pause and actually caused me to feel great about this, because J.C. Reifenberg is legit. He is a Star Wars guy. He's a film director and producer. And if you look at his IMDb page, he is the director of the film Hughes the Force. Has anyone seen Hughes the Force?
No, I have not.
No.
All right. We need to plug into this, because I have not seen it either, admittedly. I've heard great things about it. It's a mashup of John Hughes films and Star Wars.
How the hell did this slip under our radar?
Yeah. Released in 2011. J.C. Reifenberg also directed Jay and Silent Bob Go Down Under.
Oh.
Jay and Silent Bob Get Old.
Okay.
And this is with Kevin Smith.
He's a Kevin Smith prodigy.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
And, all right. I am particularly disappointed, Scott, in myself and you, that this is the first we're hearing about it.
I'm highly sad about this. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we rest assured, if J.C. Reifenberg is behind this, I've heard him on other shows and other podcasts. He's a legitimate Star Wars fan and a legitimate person. So I think our investment in 10 tickets for this, I think we're in good shape, guys.
I think so too. And if this guy has such a connection to the Kevin Smith universe, the View Askew universe, maybe there's going to be a surprise guest here. Get a little Kevin Smith action showing up with Jason Mewes and a few of his little cronies.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
So we should make our reservation for 4:20 is what I'm hearing.
Nice. Well played. So so I am thrilled we're going to this thing, and if at all possible, I would love to do some live broadcasting from this event, and maybe reaching out to Mr. Reifenberg to see if he would like to be on the show to help promote this. Although it doesn't seem like it needs a whole lot of promotion, judging by the fact that they have over 16,000 likes on Facebook just since August.
And, well, at least 10 of those are because of us, is all I'm saying. So you're welcome.
My alter ego, so at least 27. Or should I say 37? Hey.
I was going to say, you're off by 10.
I'm off by 10. My hopes and my dreams, fingers crossed, that Chewbacca Mom makes an appearance at this. That would be the showdown of the century, gentlemen.
If I can get a picture of Scott with Chewbacca Mom at this cantina, I can retire.
No, I want a picture. You want a picture with me and Chewbacca Mom and me flipping her off right there, man. A solid just motherfucker. Oh, hey, how's it going?
You know, you could actually show up and with a mask on and tell everyone you're Chewbacca Mom.
Damn it, that's a good idea.
Halloween is right around the corner, my friend.
Yeah. We're going to go in costume to this, are we not?
Oh, 100%. Come on, how could we go to this thing
and not?
I mean, I'm assuming – oh, you know what? Shoot, there's part of that article was talking about that it's an immersive experience, that there's going to be characters walking around, visitors from a galaxy far, far away. So it seems
like – are we going to cosplay? Sorry, I came way out of, you know, left field. That's all, we'll talk about that later.
Let me rewind the conversation 45 seconds and repeat that. Yes, I think we should dress up, and it's going to be an immersive experience. Probably lots of opportunity for photos. So yeah, I think I'm down with the cosplay to Scum and Villainy Cantina.
Wow. Okay. I am also down with the cosplay at the Scum and Villainy Cantina.
Although we'll be dueling Han Solos, I think, Greg.
Which Han Solo shot first?
Yeah, except I'm bald now. So
wait. Yeah. If you guys are dueling Han Solos, then I'm going as Burt Reynolds.
Nice. Can somebody go as Han Solo from Return of the Jedi? We'll have the entire...
original
trilogy covered. Like, yeah.
What a whiny bad actor!
It's Harrison Ford you're talking about.
We would also need a Force Awakens Han Solo. We would also need a Force Awakens Han Solo too. Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, so you'll need original swashbuckler Han Solo. You'll need Cool Hand Scoundrel Han Solo. You'll need
Ultimate Badass Han Solo.
Pussy whipped lovesick Han Solo. And finally, get off my lawn, Han Solo. Those are your basic four archetypes right there.
You know, would just the ultimate Force Awakens Han Solo cosplay just to have a lightsaber through your chest, though, would that be the way to do that?
I am known as that Han Solo. That's who I
am. Well, there's quite a few memes to to cover that for sure.
I am so doing that. Thank you, Greg. So to all our fans out there, I'll be the one with the lightsaber through my gut.
Well, we hope our fans join us. I mean, it would be really cool to do a meetup out there at the Scum and Villainy Cantina. And what I think is perfect is that the show is called The Wretched Hive. You'll never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy. It's just perfect. We are meant to broadcast live from this thing.
We are.
Except in this case, you actually will find the wretched hive at the Scum and Villainy.
That's right. There's a strong possibility that you will find the wretched hive at the Scum and Villainy Cantina.
Yes. You must be cautious.
So I guess the plan will be once we actually get the date, we will post the date that we will be at the Scum and Villainy and post that to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We'll send personalized
email everybody who wants one.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think we should make it a quest of the show to get J.C. Reifenberg on this show.
Let's do it.
I think we need to do whatever we can, get him on the show, promote this thing for him, and it would be fun to have him on the show. We should probably watch Hughes the Force and put a review of that film in one of the future episodes of The Wretched Hive, and get him on the show. And that maybe he'll be our first guest.
Does it count if I've already seen Jay and Silent Bob Down Under?
Yes, it counts. And now that you've said that, we need you to review that on the show, Scott.
Oh, okay.
It's in your job description as a Wretched Hive host.
I have no problem with that whatsoever.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, guys, this week we've got some other news to cover. This week was episode 3 of Star Wars Rebels. Star Wars Rebels, this episode was really fun because we... Whoa, that sort of sounded like a lightsaber.
Watch it. Somebody put that lightsaber down.
Yeah.
It just went through me, sorry.
This episode was unique because we learned something about a classic character from the original trilogy. Wedge Antilles. We get some background information on good old Wedge. And I've got a clip here, courtesy of Lucasfilm and on YouTube.com, from the most recent episode of Star Wars Rebels. We learn a little bit about Wedge's background.
Something wrong, Wedge?
No. Why?
You just look nervous.
Actually, I've been thinking about what you said in the simulator today, about how this wasn't what you signed up for.
Look, I want to do my part for the Empire. Firing on unarmed ships wasn't what I had in mind. What about you?
I was flying cargo ships when the Empire recruited me. At the time, I figured, why not? Seemed a whole lot more exciting than hauling spare parts around the galaxy. But if this is what the Empire is becoming, I don't know.
Wedge Antilles, guys, was an Imperial pilot before joining the Rebellion. What do you think?
That's an awesome little twist to that backstory there for Wedge. I actually haven't seen episode 3 yet, so this is a little bit of a spoiler alert for me, but that's okay. I'm okay with that. I've got through episode 2 and the Return of Darth, but I haven't watched episode 3 yet. But I like just throwing that in as a little nuance to the character, and knowing that he lives through fighting the good fight the rest of the trilogy makes me happy.
Yeah, I agree. It's a fun episode, and you know, this is why I like Star Wars Rebels. It's a weekly little dose of Star Wars, and you get every now and then you get a little gem like this one. I mean, just to think that Wedge was with the Empire and was recruited by the Empire and then became disenchanted with the Empire and join the Rebellion. I just think it's cool. It adds some depth to the character, and I hope they keep coming with these sort of little nuggets, because I think it just makes it makes me want to watch the show. I you know, we've got Vader on the show. We've had quite a few nuggets of information from that show that just sort of like enrich my Star Wars experience, and I love Rebels. I think it's a great, very, very fun show. 22 minutes a week. I think you called it popcorn last week, Greg. You can have popcorn anytime, yeah. Right? Just a little popcorn here and there. 22 minutes of new Star Wars every week. It's just perfect.
Yeah, totally agree. Couldn't agree more. Yeah, it's a nice little diversion. I enjoy watching it every week.
Yep. And there's actually a really nice article on EmpireOnline.com. Empire Online interviewed Dave Filoni, who is the executive producer, I believe, of Rebels. He was promoted recently. I think he's actually now in charge of all of Lucasfilm animation. But he was asked, and unfortunately I don't have audio for this, but Filoni was asked, how close are you to the time of Rogue One, referring to his show Rebels? Will any aspects of Rogue One be connected to the show in the third season? And Filoni's response is, I would say
there will be things that definitely have influenced each other and have been definitely accounted for. Something that I've been interested in is I've been aware of the kind of look of the film and the characters in the film for a while. If you look at Rogue One, it's much more gritty and very realistic looking, and a very realistic looking world, and Rebels is much more, when it starts out, a colorful world. I've been slowly adapting because I've been in the know, so that as we get closer to each other, things are definitely going to line up. I think our show will always be a bit more colorful, but it's meant to be able to ingest the look of certain things that are happening in the film. So, you know, there's this connection with Rogue One and Star Wars Rebels. We already know there's a connection with Star Wars The Clone Wars, and having a character that's in Rogue One. And so what do you guys think about this? Does this make you want to watch the show? Or what do you think about connecting this television show to something that's going to be on the big screen?
I don't have a problem with it. I would just be worried that since Rogue One ends, you know, 10 minutes before the opening of Episode 4, I think they have to be careful with how closely Rebels starts to align. Because if you want Rebels to go on for multiple seasons, if you make it too close to Rogue One in season 3 and it's going to go for 8 seasons, you're kind of locking yourself in on what's going to happen next and what the available world is you have to play with, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. I think, what did Clone Wars went 5-6 seasons?
I think 6, and I think they had plans for a 7th.
And so you hit that magic 5 seasons for syndication, right? So I would think that the goal would be at least 5. So that would take it out 2 more years. And, I mean, the whole – a big thread in Rebels is, you know, that you're seeing this sort of the start of the Rebel Alliance, right? You're seeing these sort of outcast Jedi in training. You're seeing now you're bringing in classic characters like Wedge Antilles into the mix, giving some backstory there. So I actually think it could line up pretty well. Although I think your point is really well taken. If Rogue One leads right up to the beginning of Episode 4, you could have a continuity problem there. So you got to be really careful. But I think it's pretty exciting. I think it's pretty cool that they're showing these characters and bringing classic characters into this television show. I love it.
Yeah, and it's a theme that they did kind of back when it was Lucasfilm standalone. Just I remember watching the progression of the production design as you went through the prequel trilogy, and as you kind of got to the last 20-25 minutes of Episode 3, you were looking smack at set designs that would have been in Episode 4, and it was a nice transition to watch them do that over, you know, 2 or 3 movies, and that was an element of the prequel trilogy that was very, very well done.
Yep, and talking about television shows and Star Wars, there's another article on TV and Star Wars at Forbes.com this week that begs the question, would a Star Wars TV show even work? A live-action show? Of course, there's been talk of live-action Star Wars television shows for quite a few years. It was reported, I want to say 4 or 5 years ago, that there were as many as 50 scripts that had been written and shelved. And each script was like almost a little mini movie, and they were just didn't have the technology or the money to create this live action series. Lucas was very high on what had been produced, but just
he was. Oh God, was he?
Yes, I agree with Greg on that one. Yes,
he is from the Bay Area after all. This article on Forbes.com. Is comparing this live action show, the potential of a live action TV show, to the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., of course, from the Marvel Universe, which,
Greg Glenn's a big fan of.
That's right.
Favorite show ever.
This article says Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has had 4 seasons and 68 episodes and counting under its belt. So in that sense, the show is a success. In these days, 65% of new shows are canceled, so ABC has to be pleased that S.H.I.E.L.D. has made it this far. So not bad for the bottom line. On the other hand, Marvel backtracked on its promise to Joss Whedon, who was initially going to serve as the longtime showrunner on S.H.I.E.L.D. In his absence, the show hasn't exactly been embraced by fans. So I'm just curious to think, Greg, what do you think about... I know we've covered this a little bit a few episodes ago, but I mean, could a live-action television show work? And couldn't ABC have learned by now from their mistakes with S.H.I.E.L.D. and produced a strong Star Wars hour-long weekly episodic show?
Well, I think the problem is with ABC itself. And I think that's the major problem you have with any of the big networks, is because they really have to cater to the lowest common denominator. And this is all kind of my own personal thoughts and feelings about it. So I don't take it as gospel, please. But they kind of play to the lowest common denominator, and that's why you have so many of the Law and Order, CSI. I mean, there's nothing wrong with those shows. They're very vanilla and cookie cutter and kind of by the numbers. And that's where something like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is kind of outside the box. And it's not going to appeal to, you know, your grandmas in Boise, Idaho. You know, they're looking for the next Murder, She Wrote. You look at, I'll compare, so my take in the past has always been, you've got to make less shows, make them higher quality. And, you know, the problem with S.H.I.E.L.D. is that it's 20 episodes when it should be 10 episodes, so on and so forth. But to contrast that, you have a company like the CW, which produces The Flash and Arrow and Supergirl and those types of shows, 20 episodes a season, and they do just fine in the ratings. They're super happy with them. So, and getting to answer your question, I think, I don't know if Star Wars would do well on ABC. I think it would do gangbusters on a smaller network.
You know, it's interesting, just as a digression real quick, because you're talking about the CW and the DC Universe little niche that they've carved out for themselves. I was reading an article today about the CW. It's apparently their 10th anniversary as a network, from when WB and UPN got folded into this, whatever the hell it is. I don't even know what CW stands for. But they were saying that the CW is enjoying some of the financial success that it is, because the parent companies that own it, Warner Brothers and Viacom, they don't make their money off of first run stuff on CW. They make it off of the streaming rights, off of like Hulu and Netflix and all of that. So they kind of use it as a not a dumping ground, that's the wrong term, but a place to put these shows that maybe don't garner enough ratings for the big boy, big league networks, but still do strong enough that they will generate that kind of revenue and ad stream. I don't know if that had anything to do with what you're talking about, but I thought it would make me sound smart, so I jumped in.
No, I like it. It kind of fits in because, you know, they do it, you're right, they do seem to have like a different model almost. You know, they don't seem to run like the typical network does. So, yeah, no, I would agree with that.
Yeah, I like the idea of a Star Wars show on you know, like Netflix or
Oh, that's my dream right there. Mm-hmm.
That's your dream, but I'll tell you what, if Luke Cage can crash the Netflix servers over this past weekend, Star Wars will melt them down.
Yeah, no doubt about
agree.
It. Yeah. And is that deal with Netflix still happening with Lucasfilm properties?
Well, it's all my understanding is it's Disney properties, which includes Disney. Lucasfilm, but right. It's not. I think we hashed that out a couple weeks back. It's not that they're going to just, you know, vomit everything Disney and Lucasfilm onto the network. I think they are just, they have the first rights for all of the upcoming projects, and okay. They will eventually parse out the others onto the network as they come around.
I think that's right.
Got it.
Look, I'm going to jump in on this just for a second. I'm going to start off just by saying this.
Sorry, I have to take a drink every time Scott says I'm going to jump in on this for a second.
Shot.
I promise, Dave, I'm not going to go off on one of my typical rants, but I will say this. As a fan, who wouldn't want a live-action Star Wars show that's done properly, whether it's on a major network like ABC or whether it's done on one of these more niche networks, streaming networks like Netflix? I mean, look what Netflix and Marvel has done. really, even with this Luke Cage series, I think we were having a little bit of discussion with this. They are just knocking it out of the park. They're great adult-driven dramas. Great stuff out there. Action is insane. Who wouldn't want that? Now, something you mentioned earlier, Steve, you said something about that they didn't know if they could be done. There was 50 scripts and all this stuff and all this. That I'm calling BS on this because there have been so many great genre-type television shows that have been put out there. And you mentioned Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And honestly, for me, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was one of those shows that when it came out was – you know, it was a tough sell. It was really hard to get into it. I sat there and said, God, this is great. What a great concept. We all know if you read Marvel Comics and you know everything about Nick Fury and the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's a great idea. It didn't translate well the first season. It was a very tough season to get through. But after that, it kept progressively getting better. They figured out what the problems were. They started to iron some of those out, and they told better stories. Was it perfect? No, it's not. But it's getting better all the time in each episode that I find just has some just amazing, fantastic character-driven stories. Now, that being said, let's jump over to another one that failed but was one of the most underrated or just amazing shows that fans absolutely love is Firefly. Mm. There is a genre-driven show that is basically a space western that you will ask anybody in any type of – you go to every Comic-Con out there, and I swear to God, every single one of them will tell you top-rated show of all time. Why did Fox kill that show? The market wasn't there. The ratings weren't there. All that nonsense. That show could have survived and moved on, and it was seriously some of the best written television ever. So good. So amazing. I think there is a potential for a Star Wars live-action show. I think they could do it.
Yeah, I think I'm the only person on the podcast and probably in the world that is not a huge Firefly fan. But I have seen Joss Whedon on panels and in interviews, and he's talked about how Fox just wound up being the wrong network for a show like that, and how he feels like if Firefly had been developed and put on a different network, it probably would have kept going because the network would have had a better idea of what to do with a product like that. And Fox just was not the match and the mesh for it.
I honestly think Fox, you're right. You're right, Dave. I think Fox were just cowards. I think they just didn't have faith in a show that actually could have grown into an amazing series that could have lasted, you know, a good solid 5 seasons, maybe even 7 seasons. There was a ton of story to be told there. And if you've all watched it, and even if you're not a big fan of it, Dave, there is a lot of story to be told there. There is some unbelievable crap that is out there in the world today on network television that constantly gets aired. That was an entertaining, talent-filled show, talented writers. There was a bunch of people involved in that show. I mean, we know Joss Whedon writes the hell out of shows. So why couldn't that happen in Star Wars?
Nope, I'm I am right there with you. And I guess I was thinking along the lines of wherever a Star Wars product is, if it's a quality product, people are going to go and find it. You know, the Tartakovsky Clone Wars, that was a high quality product, and people still talk about it and seek it out to this day. Mm-hmm. And it probably had the lowest exposure of any Star Wars TV product that's been out there.
I agree.
I caught an episode.
Caravan of Courage, but it was all right.
Well, you know, damning it with faint praise there, but
I caught one of the 3-minute segments of the Tartakovsky the other day, and man, it is so good. It is just so strong. I love it. Love every second of that.
Of a Star Wars Tartakovsky?
Yeah, it was the episode where the clone troopers come down to the planet in their transport, crashes on the planet, and they all jump out and start doing battle with the battle droids. Oh man,
the arc troopers, right?
Yes,
the blue and red. Oh my god, that episode is fantastic.
So good.
They have to take out that cannon. Oh, seriously, great episode.
Nice.
My favorite is the fight between Asajj Ventress and Anakin in the rain. That's just with the raindrops sizzling as they hit the sabers. It's just awesome. Just so good.
Yeah.
Now, did that air before Attack of the Clones?
Yes. Yeah, the movie.
Yes.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. It aired, but yeah, it did. It aired between episodes 2 and 3. Uh-huh. So it was after Attack of the Clones, before Revenge of the Sith.
Okay. Is that just, yes, no, wait, yes, it, no, 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 yes.
I couldn't remember, but yeah, that makes sense.
You put numbers in there, and that reminds me of math, and we all know that's my downfall.
Math is hard. Hey, guys, let's take a quick break and acknowledge our sponsor really quick here, audible.com. And for you, the listeners of the Wretched Hive podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download and a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. And there's over 250 Star Wars titles available. And guys, as you know, every week I scroll through the Audible library and pick out a title for us to play live on the show. And I think you're really going to love my selection this week. This week, I was able to find Star Wars: The Courtship of Princess Leia.
Son of a bitch.
Written
by Dave Wolverton and narrated by Anthony Heald. It's only 3 hours long. I am going to get this and listen to it tomorrow. I have to, because here's a sample of Star Wars: The Courtship of Princess Leia.
Before you play it, I almost thought you were going to say Anthony Daniels was the narrator, and I was
going to
die.
Me too. Me too.
Lately, Han had begun to realize that the war against the remnants of the Empire might take years, even decades, to win. Zinj and some lesser warlords were firmly entrenched in over a third of the galaxy. But the warlords now seemed to be on the move, pillaging entire star systems as they swept toward the free worlds. The New Republic could not patrol such a vast front. Just as the old Empire had struggled to repel the Rebel Alliance, the New Republic battled the might of the warlords and their vast fleets. Han didn't want Leia to get her hopes raised for a Hapan alliance. "Don't expect too much from the Hapans," he said. "I've never heard of them giving anyone anything, except a hard time."
Except a hard time. So you can own that book tonight! Simply go to audibletrial.com/hive. That's H-I-V-E. Again, that's audibletrial.com/hive for your free audio download. And you can own The Courtship of Princess Leia, as do I.
And find out more about the hijinks of Warlord Zinj.
You know, The Courtship of Princess Leia is the first appearance of the planet Dathomir, which is, of course, where... Somebody? Help me? Somebody?
Nope. You got yourself into this, mister. You can get yourself out of it.
Tell me all about the planet Dathomir.
A room for Star Wars nerds, and nobody knows... Nobody knows that the planet Dathomir is where the Darth Maul people. Yeah, it's what's the race
Maul
though.
Darth Maul people. Oh my god!
Is it Dathomir?
I think Nico's actually embarrassed. He's on this podcast right now.
Yeah. And you guys even watch the Clone Wars. They have a whole like arc with those people, Darth Maul people.
To be fair, in my defense, I did not watch the Clone Wars, and what do you mean, those people?
What do you mean, those people?
Stereotyping is really not okay on the show, all right? Those people.
So the planet's called, what is it, Greg?
Dathomir.
Dathomir, and the people are the Zabraks.
The Dothraki?
Wrong podcast. Wrong show.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Save that for the Wretched Throne podcast.
Yes.
I think it's where the Daleks came from, actually. The Daleks from Dothraki attacked the Yeah.
The Daleks. The Daleks is from Dothraki.
Guys, we have a couple of additional stories here to share before we take a little break until we review the Rogue One trailer tomorrow, which is actually on the show today if you're listening on Friday. This story just, I got a tickle out of this story this week, guys. There's a story on HNGN.com. Headline is Star Wars Prince Episode 8 News Rumors Spoilers. Princess Leia is really Supreme Leader Snoke.
Oh shit.
So there's quite a few, there's quite a few memes and theories out there about the origins of Snoke, and well, this one I think I like the best, and I am now subscribing to the fact that Princess Leia is actually Snoke.
You never do see him in the same room together.
You never do. And makes sense with what Palpatine was able to pull off, pulling the strings on both sides. And who's to say that Princess Leia isn't doing the very same thing? According to this article, it is said that Princess Leia separated with Han Solo because she wants to train Kylo Ren to the dark side of the Force. Since she is Ben Solo's mother, she did not have any problem training him in private. So I think this is hilarious, and we could do a whole show just on Snoke theories, guys.
I am Snoke.
No, I think Snoke is Lord Voldemort.
Hearing you flesh out that rumor, Steve, I like that one. My two favorites so far, no kidding, no joke aside, my two favorites have been either...
Greg, your audio is so bad right now.
Yeah.
It's coming in and out.
Testes 1, 2, 3. I'm coming in now. How about now?
Barely.
Anything? Barely. I don't know what is going on, actually.
I'm pretty sure that the alien you have captive is about to break out and kill you, and this is just a transmission we see 45 minutes later in a movie.
Are you passing behind the moon?
John Carpenter is directing your feed right now.
My favorite part of this is when the poor guy that has bad audio is sitting there trying to troubleshoot, and we're all making fun of him. That's the favorite part of it.
Oh, it's not like he can hear us anyway.
You guys are jerks. I hear it all.
Oh my God, he's totally Kurt Russell in The Thing right now. That's crazy.
Am I coming in now? Can I talk now? Can I just talk?
You know what?
Can I just talk?
Soldier through it, my friend. Go ahead.
Okay, so I have two favorite theories. One of them being Mace Windu surviving the fall in Revenge of the Sith and coming back in these notes. So that is theory number one that I like a lot. Theory number two is, of course, Darth Plagueis was never actually killed by Palpatine, or Palpatine, we'll call him, and he is actually Snoke. I like both of those theories, but this Leia theory may actually sneak up there. I don't think it's true in the slightest, but I like the theory nonetheless.
I'm with you with the Mace Windu theory. I really like that.
So you guys like that find that I posted in the chat, huh?
Yeah.
You guys all BM'd me about it for days.
Oh, I love it.
All right, so here's the question then. If that's true, I'm not trying to shoot this down, I'm asking a question.
We're talking Leia or Mace?
Mace.
Okay.
No, there's no scenario.
Plagueis.
Until Snoke produces a metal bikini, I'm not giving this theory any credence. So if the Mace theory is real, how is it possible that he survived and there were two Sith Lords for a long period of his survival? Because the Sith only allow a master and an apprentice at any one given time. Or do we just say, it's more of a guideline than a rule?
What do you mean?
Well, he has taken under his wing more than one force, because obviously Dooku and Maul were both there at the same time.
Well, but you have a master and an apprentice, right? But then you've you've got other dark side wielders potentially. Right?
Okay. I'm going to jump in this one, and Dave, start drinking.
Taking a drink.
There are so many theories right now because of this. Mace Windu is the one talking to Yoda at the end of episode one who states that there is only a master and apprentice.
He was lying the entire time.
Holy crap. Second of all, Tyrannus, or whatever the hell you want to call him, Count Dooku.
Well done.
Technically wasn't part of the dark side. He just left the Jedi Order when Maul was around. He didn't become that until Maul was dead and Sidious needed a new apprentice. And Sidious enticed him to come to the dark side. Is that correct? Okay. So, I was not going for this Mace Windu theory, but now that you say this, Mace, at that moment, all the way back in episode one, is flat out saying it with Yoda. They're having a little powwow right there while they're burning Qui-Gon Jinn's body. So, I'm still stuck, though, on the lightsaber thing, the blue, the red, and the purple, and the green. That's an issue with me.
What do you mean? Why is it an issue?
Well, Steve and I were kind of mentioning this, but so typically it's blue and red. Blue is the good, the light side of the Force, and red is the dark side of the Force. However, Luke throws a whole thing into a wrench into the whole plan when he builds a green lightsaber.
But, wait a minute. Qui-Gon's lightsaber was green.
Okay.
Yeah, they're in Attack of the Clones. There's an equal mix of green and blue lightsabers in Attack of the Clones.
True, but if we're going by the actual release dates, let's just go by that for a second. The first time we see a green lightsaber is Luke in Return of the Jedi. So yes, you're right.
Correct.
There are green lightsabers in the prequels, but then I will flat out say that the prequels fucked everything up. But so the theory was that Mace has a purple, which is both the light side and the dark side combined, the blue and the red.
So I had always thought for years and years and years that the blue lightsaber was like the apprentice level lightsaber, and the green was for, you know, you're a full Jedi or a Jedi master.
Yes.
And then I could have sworn that Lucas in one of his interviews said, oh, no, that's it. Completely random. Doesn't mean anything. Pay no attention.
Yes, you're right. And you know what makes me really upset about that, Dave, is now you're going to make me go review Attack of the Clones and that battle sequence to see which one of the Jedis was holding a blue or a green lightsaber, and if an apprentice or...
I can save you the trouble, Scott, because there's a scene where Yoda is training the younglings with the lightsaber, and there's blue and green in that room with the children.
Mm. Yeah, it's random.
Look at the big brain on Nico.
Damn.
Maybe the kids with the green ones are just really, really good.
they're just little.
They got 5 bolt stars that day.
they got to hold Yoda's saber.
Yeah, if I seriously had to go through that entire arena battle sequence in Attack of the Clones and had to figure out if Barriss Offee versus, you know, whatever else, I would literally shoot myself.
Let's go back to Revenge of the Sith, to the scenes when Yoda's training the younglings.
You know what I do? I perform Harry Carey with my own lightsaber. That's what I do.
Yeah, I'm subscribing to this Mace Windu theory the more I think about it. I really like it because, you know, with respect to the fact that there's no more, no less, only, you know, a master and an apprentice, it's not like when the Emperor throws him out the window in episode 3 that he instantly becomes a Sith Lord. Right. I mean, he's got it's going to simmer in him for a while. He's got to it could be a slow turn. He feels, you know, that the Jedi betrayed him, that Anakin beat him to the punch, so to speak, that it could take several years of healing and letting the hate in him and grow to the point where he actually gets powerful enough.
Yeah. To become a Sith. Wouldn't be able to lay claim II a Sith Lord title while Palpatine was alive. And he doesn't make an appearance in the original trilogy because Palpatine's there. This whole time, he's biding, he's training, he's, you know, gaining influence in parts of the galaxy. And then when the Empire crumbles, I mean, you would think that with the death of the Empire, the explosion of the second Death Star, like, all this money, all these resources, all these, like, key people, you know, Vader's dead now, that the entire Empire would just crumble. But in slides Snoke, and he has all this influence already enough to be able to resurrect it in the First Order. Yeah. Like, he's not claiming that title, you know, the whole time while Palpatine's alive until he dies and then shows up and like, hey, guess what? I'm a Sith.
There's and a void, right? Now, he fills this void.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's no reason why he couldn't be, because he never claimed to be a Sith. Palpatine was, you know, the Sith, and Vader was his apprentice the entire time. And then when they both die, well, now there's not a Sith master. In walks Mace Windu. Yeah. And then he needs an apprentice. Gimme Ben Solo.
Makes total sense.
This walks too close to the whole Darth Maul thing. So are you telling me that there theoretically could have been a moment where Mace Windu took off to an outer rim planet, built himself a spider body, and bided his time and let the hate flow through him and suddenly turned into Darth Maul? I'm going with this, guys.
I think you did that backwards.
Maybe.
I'm going with it.
But I like it because it kind of fits with other characters in The Force Awakens also. Because that whole theory ties into Finn being, you know, Mace Windu's son, and that the Force Awakens within him. And it shows why Snoke would be so anti-Rey, being that, you know, another fan theory that Rey is a Palpatine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Mace Windu would have hatred for him. And that, you know, Han Solo says even to Ben that when, you know, when Snoke's done with you, like, he's going to kill you, he's going to get rid of you. Well, it's because he's got Skywalker lineage, and Mace Windu hates the Skywalkers because Anakin betrayed him.
I like it. I like it a lot. It's lining up.
I feel like it lines up too good to not be true.
I'm going to go on record and say I'm not a fan of them having all of the characters related in some way. Like, Rey has to be related to a main trilogy. Finn has to be related to a main trilogy cast member. Is that necessary? Do we need that? Can't dudes just be dudes? And
Oh, we got Poe Dameron.
Yeah, he doesn't need to be related to anybody, right?
He's actually the grandson of Wedge Antilles.
Well, at its heart, though, you know, Star Wars is a Skywalker story, right? So, and family lineage is a really, really important part of the whole series. So, to me, I think it does work, and it is an important part of it. Does it have to be? No, but I think it adds some intrigue, and it helps line up things with the original trilogy. Certainly.
Yeah. I guess if you think about it, like, it's a Skywalker story, like, you know, it's not the Godfather without the Corleones. Is that what you're going for?
Yeah, I think that's a fair analogy. Sure.
All right. I think that's an offer, Greg, that you can't refuse.
Right? Okay.
If you find a Tauntaun head in your bed tonight, you know where it came from.
Name me a Star Wars movie that doesn't have a Skywalker in it.
One of the Clone Wars episodes. One of the
movie.
Couple of the Rebels episodes.
Boom.
Also not movies.
Great wins.
Caravan of Courage.
Caravan of Courage, mother effer.
All right.
He gave in.
The big heap.
The great
heap. For a thousand generations, the Jedi Knights were the guardians of peace, of justice in the Old Republic.
It's grounded, like a lot of subject views of what it's like to be really in a war in the Star Wars universe.
Attacking that battle station ain't my idea of courage. It's more like suicide.
Resistance fighters unite for a daring mission to steal the Death Star plans and bring new hope to the galaxy.
Rogue One Reconnaissance.
Rogue One Reconnaissance. Request one round elimination ASAP. Roger, stand one round elimination. Stand by.
Well, big news this week from Rogue One. As we mentioned earlier, only 62 days away from the release of Rogue One. Star Wars. Wait, what is it? Sorry. It's Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, right? Is that
the
official title?
It's only
the
name of the movie.
I know. Well, what is it? It's Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, right? Or is it?
Yeah.
To be fair, you haven't heard much about it. They've done a very poor job of marketing this movie. So
true.
I totally get why you would confuse that title.
So this week we had a couple of news stories about Rogue One. First, we had a couple of posters that were released. We had a Russian Comic-Con poster that was released that actually is really cool.
Love that poster.
Yeah, I do too. It's shows the sort of the Bellian helmet laying upside down on the beach in the water, and with the logo, the Rebellion logo, the Rebels logo, reflecting on the water. Just looks really cool. And then earlier this week, we had the new Rogue One poster that was released in the U.S. We talked a little bit about that earlier. This is at the top of the show. Just a great-looking poster. And you can find that at StarWars.com. The big news is we had the Rogue One trailer, full trailer, number 2, hit the airwaves. And, man... What did you guys think?
Dave, you want to take
My jaw was on the floor a lot.
Yeah, I think I had a similar experience. I was on the train on the way to work, and Greg sent the link out, and I was able to stream it right away. And, man, you know, it gave me the feels, as the kids say these days.
Yeah, I got to work, and I'm like, well, I started checking out a few emails. I'm like, you know what? I need to set this aside. Take 2.5 minutes and watch this trailer, and oh my god, jaw on the floor. Doesn't even explain the feelings that were going.
So Nico, what was your reaction?
It was pretty darn cool. You know, I had to watch it like 4 or 5 times, make sure I caught everything, all the little details that people might have missed. I know there were a couple that I picked up on my second and third time watching it that were actually really just cool little details that you wouldn't, you know, necessarily think anything of until you actually really saw it and thought about it.
Yeah. So the thing that jumps out to me with regard to that is that Jedi statue. That's like, did you guys see that? That's like it looks like a fallen statue. It's huge, 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 because they show the ship flying in front of it, and it just looks enormous.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Did see that. Yeah. I'm going to jump in with a couple things myself real quick. Sorry, Nico, if I'm cutting you off. But
no worries, Dave. Start drinking.
Yeah, the things that I loved that I need to point out is I love the extra stuff we get to see with Mads on this one. There's more story that's involved with this one. I love that. And then the other thing is you get to see Saw Gerrera with the mechanical limbs, and I thought that was amazing.
Yeah, that was totally awesome.
And the great foreshadowing on that character is if you know the Clone Wars and you know his character and the connection with him and Anakin, you see this great duality between Anakin becoming Darth Vader, who is in the mechanical suit to help him live and breathe, and then you see Saw Gerrera, who is now also part machine. A lot of pieces of him are now mechanical. Was it 2 legs and an arm? Or and he has a breathing suit too, right?
I know at least 1 leg. Okay. To be honest, I don't know. But
it's hard to tell, and the shot was kind of quick.
It was. You know, the whole thing is very dark as well. Did you guys notice that? Like, it not only are the themes dark, but literally the lighting. It's sort of,
yep.
You know, there's a dark sense of sort of dread with this movie, and which is so cool for the Star Wars universe to go there.
Yeah, there were a couple moments. I got to jump in on this again. Sorry if I'm cutting anyone off, but
drink.
The dark feeling of this is incredible. It's palpable because there's a moment where you see a lot of the rogue characters, the team that's going in, where it doesn't look like the situation's going to go very well for them. And I love that. There's I can't remember all their names right now, but they're one of the guys looks like he's going he's on his last leg. He's gonna take one for the team, basically.
And you don't mean Saw.
And I don't mean Saw.
Yeah, so you're talking about that scene with Vader when you see Vader, Darth Vader walking through the mist with purpose.
So let me just, because that was one thing that jumped out at me watching it three times back to back when I got home tonight. Yeah. The way Vader moves, and obviously we should expect this as a different actor, but it doesn't feel like the Vader I'm used to from the original trilogy. Yes, he was walking on purpose, but it just felt different. The movement felt different to me.
I absolutely had the same reaction, but then I was thinking, like, I need to go back and watch Episode 4 again, because when he strides into the Tantive IV, for instance, he's striding like a badass. You know, he's walking around kicking ass, taking names later. And that's how this felt to me. He's walking in. Whoever is standing there is about to die. His life is about to end. You know, freaking Darth Vader is walking to you with purpose. You're going to die.
Yeah, I got the other
Vader moment was, though, when we hear Krennic speak for the first time talking about the power. Like, that's Vader's helmet in the foreground of the shot.
That's a great shot that you're bringing up, Dave. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, so. There's a lot here we could talk about. I'm not going to go into spoilers, but I have a really interesting perspective or thoughts on that moment and the relationship between Darth Vader and Krennic. I think what I'm going to find most interesting, there's going to be a ton of action in this movie from what we've seen in these trailers, but the dynamic between those two, the relationship between those two is going to be unbelievable if I think where they're going with this is actually where they're going. So that's, I actually want to see the what happens between Vader and Krennic in this.
Oh, me too. I'm fascinated by the idea that here's an Imperial officer that's not scared of Vader and is just willing to go toe to toe with him. I think that's going to be a fantastic dynamic.
Absolutely.
Who's really in charge?
Yeah, exactly.
There's definitely a power struggle there, and I have a feeling that, and we know just because we all have seen A New Hope, we know where that power struggle ends up. But to see it happen on screen is going to be fantastic. And the other thing I thought was, there's a moment where and we've seen this in previous trailers, where there is a definite person walking through a crowd of stormtroopers on what looks like the bridge or one of the viewing screens of the Death Star. At first, I used to think that was director Krennic. This might be the surprise guest appearance of Tarkin in this film. And that's my guess. I'm going to throw that out there.
It's Governor Tarkin still, maybe.
Governor, you're correct. Yeah. Thank you, Nico.
I love that. And I had actually forgotten that. Aren't they digitizing him?
There were talks about that happening. So I'm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that sequence, if you look, it's not Krennic who's walking through that crowd. It's not the white cape. It's not it's not the same shape head. So it definitely looks like somebody in a very high position of power. And my guess is that is Tarkin that we see from behind. I think that's going to be a fantastic moment if that's him.
Now, talking about Krennic, you know, the line that he says, "This power is immeasurable." What I jumped to was it Admiral Mahdi that says, "We have the ultimate power in the universe. I suggest we use it."
Right.
You know, so it's like, it kind of reframes that scene a little bit for me, because Vader is looking at him like, yeah, I've heard this before. You know?
Yeah. Man, I really want to say something, but I can't say anything without saying spoilers. And I don't want to ruin anything.
Well, you know, we have gone down the spoiler road in the show before. I think it's fine.
Okay, well, let me throw this out there, and I'll try and keep it as spoiler-free as possible.
Throw it out there. Lay it down, brother.
Steve, you make a great point on that. My feeling is the last time we saw the Death Star on screen was being built. Do you hear that? Is there
a... Yeah, some weird thing.
Okay. The last time we saw the Death Star on screen was being built at the end of Revenge of the Sith. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So my theory is, and my thought process and thinking here on this is, the Death Star isn't fully operational in this film. Mm-hmm. And the destruction that we've seen in the trailer is basically either a test shot or figuring out the power of the actual internal laser in that thing. Now, there's something more that I don't want to say, but I think there's something that's going to add to that and give it the full strength that the Death Star that we see in A New Hope actually has.
So, because was Alderaan the first test of the Death Star's power, right?
Of its full...
So, as far as we know.
Yes. It was, I think it was the first demonstration, but to Scott's point, I think that, yeah, the Death Star was fully operational as of the start of, you know, A New Hope. Like, we saw it become operational in real time. So all this stuff that's going to happen in Rogue One, it's going to be a test. And I'm just going to, Scott, if we're thinking about the same thing, yeah, you know, is your spoiler, would it have something to do with, if I were to name an actor, Billy Blank, would that have something to do with it?
Yeah.
Okay. We're not going to go any further.
Okay. Also, it has something to do with a specific planet involved in this. Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely have that feeling and that thought. And we actually saw a hint of that in this trailer with the fact that Steve mentioned earlier the fallen Jedi statue, which I found awesome that they showed that in this trailer.
Yeah.
So the other big thing that kind of it didn't register until the second or so time that I watched it, and I actually give Christine credit for making it gel in my brain.
Yeah.
When she commented, "There's no John Williams score, and I don't even care. This looks awesome."
That's true.
The music for it was very, very good. It was definitely, you know, derivative. It had kind of the feel, but it was not somebody trying to impersonate John Williams.
That's a really good point. I do want to point this out. I'm going to add on to what you just said. After watching this trailer about 37 times.
37?
37. I went back and rewatched all of the Force Awakens teasers and trailers.
Mm.
And what I found very interesting is, if you listen, there is a lot of John Williams score, but they use a lot of the lesser known parts of the trilogy to really emphasize the emotion in the original Force Awakens teasers and trailers that were released. And there is a similarity. It's definitely not John Williams, at least as far as I can tell. But I will say that they did a fantastic job of matching up the feels of all the Force Awakens trailers.
Nice. Nice. And I love the dialogue in this too. When Jyn Erso says, rebellions are built on hope. And then Diego Luna's character, I can't think of his name right now, it makes 10 men feel like 100. You know, I'm ready to like run through a brick wall right then, you know? I'm like, oh my God, I'm all choked up. I'm going to go kick ass with the rebellion.
Seriously, she did a great job of that. That I've had some wishy-washy feelings on some of her speech moments. She's had great moments, but some are like, oh, well, maybe they were taken out of context. This was one of those moments, Steve, you pointed this out. It's great. Same thing. I felt like, damn it, I want to jump in there and join this rebellion because it was awesome the way she was delivering the speech. The actors' reactions in the trailer to her speech were great. Yeah. There's just this camaraderie that just like everyone jumped in and like, let's just do this. It was, oh God, so good, so good.
What did you guys think about the about halfway through the trailer they show a shot of, and I don't know the characters' names well enough yet, but the blind force wielding character, and so he kind of like says like, oh, how many do you need, and he kind of looks at the camera and he's got this big broad smile. Were you guys okay with that? Did that feel weird to you at all?
I'm trying to remember that now.
I know the sequence you're talking about.
Yeah.
It did, but it also kind of worked, so I was fine with it.
Yeah.
The only thing I remember with him is the scene where we've seen many times in the previous trailers where he's taking out the large group of stormtroopers. What I found really interesting this time is, it's not just him and his staff that's taking it out. It's his partner, who we know from some of the background that we've been given, is a non-believer of the Force and has a little bit of a contradictory opinion about that, taking everybody out around him with, you know, an obvious crude weapon.
Like a staff.
Well, he's taken out every... Oh, growling here, sorry. He's taken out everyone with the staff... what's his name? What's his character
name?
Yeah,
we don't know. We got to learn these character names, guys.
Damn it. I can't believe... I know a few of them, but I don't know his. Chirrut Imwe. That's it. Chirrut Imwe. Let's go with that.
Close enough.
His buddy's got an actual gun, like some sort of a laser cannon, that he takes out the rest of the stormtroopers to kind of help him out. And I found that very similar to the feeling of Han Solo and Luke from A New Hope, where Luke is learning about this spirituality and this force, the idea of the force, where Han Solo is, he's got his trusty blaster at his side. Mm. And there was that feeling and dynamic between those two characters. More character-driven in this trailer. I'm loving this. I can't even tell you how much I'm loving this. I'm sure I've said it 100 times already.
Mm-hmm. Now, we also saw some X-Wings, right? I don't think we had we seen X-Wings for a Rogue One trailer before today?
We have, but not in this way. And yes, they're X-Wings in space. Yeah. Oh my God, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Genuine article, original trilogy, X-Wings. They looked badass.
They did.
Yeah.
And taking down, also there's a moment in the trailer where they're taking down that hidden fortress that they seem to be doing a surprise attack on in the rain on the cliffs.
Oh, yeah.
There's a moment where you see that entire fortress falling over and coming down the side of the cliff, which just looks great, too.
Yeah.
I can't wait for this. 63, 62 days. I just seriously can't wait for this.
So it sounds like we've got thumbs up all around from the Wretched High for this trailer.
Yeah, I'm giving it 100%. I'm
oh, yeah. If the story is even half as good as the visuals in this thing, it's going to be an amazing film.
Yep. Totally agree.
Yeah.
The artistry of it, the art of the trailer is just so strong. Yeah. Every scene screams Star Wars. Oh, there's one other one with the sort of this street fight in the whatever city it is. There's the AT-ST. Yeah, that's walking down the street or the pathway there, just like blasting people left and right. That looked badass.
Oh yeah.
When they break Jyn Erso out of looks like some sort of holding cell or whatever, that was awesome.
Yes.
And there's not one missed beat in this trailer. It's perfect.
That's what I loved. I said it earlier. There's more story points in this. Mm. We really learn more about Jyn's father, which I think is great. You actually see how he is what looks to be forced into working for the Empire to help build this Death Star. I think that's a great way of introducing this character and really bringing him into, somebody at my work actually said they didn't know that Mads Mikkelsen was in this film. Mm. And what a great way of introducing him.
Yeah, the whole cast, the casting looks great. It makes me wonder what does the Empire do in order to coerce you to essentially give up the technology to build the Death Star? It makes me think that maybe one of those plot points is that they have his daughter.
Well,
I actually believe that's going to be the subject of the novel that's coming out next month, Catalyst.
Sweet.
Okay.
If I'm reading the summary correctly of what that book is about.
Oh, I want to add. I'm sorry, Dave. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
Oh no, I'm good. You can jump in.
I want to throw in. there were definitely some throwbacks which made me feel so unbelievably nostalgic to the original Star Wars: A New Hope. One of the moments that I just absolutely loved was you see what looks to be a flashback sequence with Mads at their homestead on this other planet. Mm-hmm. That Mads and Jyn and most likely their family grew up on, what looks to be, again, like Tatooine, but in this case a more lush planet.
You got the moisture evaporator.
The moisture evaporators are in there, and you have Mads walking out, seeing the Imperials landing out in the far distance, and it's such a throwback to Luke on Tatooine looking at the twin sunsets with the moisture evaporator sitting right there next to him. I love that moment. The other moment is there is a great moment where they're looking at the view screen on the Death Star platform, and you see one of those Imperial... I'm shaming myself right now for not remembering their actual names. One of the Death Star guys with the funny helmets that comes over the top and the bottom in the gunning man station or whatever, the manning station where... which you see Luke and Vader fighting in Return of the Jedi. Mm. That moment to me, I think I grabbed a screenshot and posted it on Facebook. I'll have to double check that. still just it gave me goosebumps to see that sequence. Those are the guys that when they're telling them to fire the Death Star, you see them turning their helmets, pulling the levers.
Right.
Felt mm-hmm. so 1977 right there. I was just flipping out at work. I loved it.
Yeah, there's a quality to the images, to the film. It's the lighting or it's the... Well, I'm assuming they shot this on film and not digitally.
Yes.
There's just a quality to it that screams, you know, A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. It's just, it looks and feels like original trilogy. They've done a great job. Gareth Edwards knocked it out of the park so far, anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah. We gave J.J. Abrams a ton of credit for revitalizing the Star Wars franchise, but Gareth Edwards, holy crap, man, you are the man. That is seriously an incredible feat to pull off.
Yep. All right, December 16th, we're 62 days away, and you can guarantee that we will all be in the theater, and well, maybe we'll have a listener meetup at that time. Get everybody out to the theater.
We need to start planning the logistics on this.
Yeah, no kidding. It's right around the corner. It's the Very Lonely Luke Tweet of the Week.
Red 5 standing by.
Because if there's something to whine about, you can count on Luke.
But I was going into Toshi Station to pick up some power converters.
Even though he's now an old man.
No!
It just isn't fair.
What do you got for us this week, Greg?
Well, this week, Lonely Luke is—he's still out there, you know, and he's still just making his way. What we had, we go back to October 3rd is where we go back to right now. So we're about 10 days ago, and it says I had a hard time talking with Kylo at family gatherings. He always asked about Vader. What am I supposed to tell him? I only met my dad twice.
He did only meet him twice, I guess. Wow. Very lonely.
Feels bad, man. Feels bad.
Truth hurts, doesn't it?
Poor, very lonely Luke. Poor guy.
And the show comes to a screeching halt with that one right there. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
I think we all had to think about it. Wait.
Good job.
Wait, he only met him twice?
Yeah.
That sound you hear just breaks being slammed. And there goes.
If you count the Force Ghost, it was actually three times.
Well, yeah.
Oh, mind blown. I can tell.
Wait, are we talking about he only met Vader twice or he only met Anakin twice?
His dad twice.
Met his dad. But was Vader his dad?
Yes.
No, I am your father.
Father or son so many times.
Nico Rodriguez with the Star Wars birther issue starting
how many blue and green lightsabers are in the fucking training room with Yoda, but you forget that?
I'm just saying. Obi-Wan even says that Vader killed Anakin. Food for thought, Dave.
Wow.
Somebody get Trump's investigators back to Hawaii. We've got a new birth certificate to look up, guys.
You know, every now and then I feel like the need to pull the plug on the show, and that was one of those moments. When Dave starts yelling at Nico and dropping F-bombs, it's time to close the show.
Sorry.
Oh, well, guys, episode 21, mercifully, is in the books. This was a fun show, guys. And
was the best trailer I ever saw in my entire life. It was so good.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to go watch it again right now.
Especially the part where the land wraps around the shit.
Right. Yeah.
Folks, follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/WretchedHivePodcast. On Twitter, @WretchHivePod. I went on a Twitter explosion earlier this week again. And lots of good stuff being posted there. Lots of good links to other content and other podcasts and other shows. And we invite you to check that out. Maybe the best way to follow us, though, and we could really use your help with this, on iTunes. Helps us to get those iTunes reviews. So if you go to podcast section in your iTunes on your computer or your phone, search The Wretched Hive, and we are the first show to come up. Like us and leave a review. 5 stars, 1 star, any stars. We don't care. We just want to hear from you, the fans of The Wretched Hive podcast. Guys, closing thoughts on episode 21.
I promise I will swear less in episode 22. My bad.
I won't. A fucking dust storm. What are you talking about? That's a planet wrapping around that thing. Are you kidding me? This is awesome.
From fueled rage F-bombs.
I don't even know what I'm talking about anymore.
Why is the rum always gone?
We may need to start the show earlier, guys. I think we all get a little loopy at 11:30 at night on a weekday. Have a good week. We'll see you next week. May the Force be with us all.
May the Force be with you.
Woo!